Today is Wednesday, July 9th, 2025, and you're listening to the World Socialist Website. World peace through mass murder. Netanyahu nominates Trump for the Nobel Peace Prize, by Andre Damon. In January 1939, the Swedish parliamentarian Erik Brandt sent a darkly satirical letter to the Norwegian Nobel Committee nominating German Chancellor Adolf Hitler for the Nobel Peace Prize. Brandt's letter was written following the carve-up of Czechoslovakia in March 1939 and the annexation of Austria in March 1938. And with the knowledge that Hitler was relentlessly preparing for war throughout Europe and the whole world. Hitler's, quote, glowing love for peace was documented in his famous book, Mein Kampf, next to the Bible, perhaps the best and most popular piece of literature in the world, Brandt wrote, in words dripping with sarcasm. Probably Hitler will, if unmolested and left in peace by warmongers, pacify Europe, and possibly the whole world, he concluded. Though obvious satire, the point of the letter, was completely missed by world public opinion, which took it at face value as an elegy to the homicidal maniac, prompting outrage in newspaper offices in Sweden and around the world. Two things were different when Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu nominated another homicidal maniac, U.S. President Donald Trump, for the Nobel Peace Prize on Monday. First, Netanyahu was completely serious. Second, there was no outrage in the newspaper offices. Netanyahu announced at a dinner at the White House that he had sent his letter to the Nobel Committee. Explaining the nomination, Netanyahu praised the historic victory of the U.S.-Israeli bombing of Iran, in which the two countries used the pretext of diplomacy to assassinate dozens of civilian leaders, military officers, and scientific figures, and kill at least 600 civilians. Trump is, quote, forging peace as we speak in one country, in one region after the other, Netanyahu said. Trump, beaming with pride, extolled his contributions to world peace for having used, quote, the biggest bombs ever, the biggest bombs that we've ever dropped on anybody, in the attack on Iran. Trump then praised the use of nuclear weapons by U.S. President Harry Truman against the Japanese cities of Hiroshima and Nagasaki, saying, that stopped a lot of fighting. Seeming to express remorse that the bomb he dropped on Iran did not carry nuclear payloads. Trump's meeting with Netanyahu was hailed in the U.S. and international media as an effort to cultivate peace through the agreement of a ceasefire in Gaza, which Trump was pushing for. Never mind the fact that both men had openly stated that their vision of peace includes the ethnic cleansing of the Palestinian people and killing anyone who resists. Trump's relocation plan went unmentioned in the media preview of the trip, and of course, the words ethnic cleansing and genocide are forbidden in media coverage of U.S.-Israeli policies in Gaza. Netanyahu currently faces an arrest warrant from the International Criminal Court for war crimes perpetrated during the genocide, including the use of starvation as a weapon of war. But France, Germany, and Italy have stated that they will ignore the ICC's arrest warrant, with German Chancellor Friedrich Merz going so far as to invite Netanyahu to the country in defiance of the order. Far from seeking to prosecute the figures responsible for the genocide, the leaders of the imperialist powers are working to prosecute those who oppose it. The British group Palestine Action has been branded a terrorist organization by the UK government, which is seeking to bring terrorism charges against musical groups Kneecap and Bob Vylan, who led protests against the Gaza genocide. the main purpose of the Trump and Netanyahu meeting is to plot the next phase of peace, that is, their final solution in Palestine, the rounding up of the Palestinian population into concentration camps in preparation for their forcible displacement to other countries. When Trump first presented his plan to own the Gaza Strip, level it out, and send the Palestinian people to other countries, it was presented by the US and international media as a sort of bizarre dream. It was unfeasible and unworkable, in the words of the New York Times, which suggested the proposal might simply be a negotiating tactic. In the 6 months since he announced it, it has become clear that the plan put forward by Trump and Netanyahu is deadly serious. On Monday, Israeli Defense Minister Israel Katz announced plans to construct what he called a humanitarian city on the ruins of the city of Rafah in southern Gaza, which would hold the entire Palestinian population. He also said that the building of the camp would be coordinated with the emigration plan, which will happen. While these plans are being carried out in Israel, participation in them includes major transnational corporations and think tanks spanning the entire gamut of the political establishment. Last week, the Financial Times reported on a secret strategy document drawn up by the Boston Consulting Group, a major U.S. corporate consulting firm for relocating Palestinians from Gaza. In the follow-up article, the Financial Times revealed that the plan was created with the involvement of staffers of former UK Labour Prime Minister Tony Blair. Trump and Netanyahu take as their motto the Orwellian slogan, "War is peace." They believe they are the greatest peacemakers because they have killed the most people. By this demented logic, the genocide these men have authored is their greatest contribution to world peace. Of course, in the eyes of the world public opinion, these, Trump and Netanyahu, are tyrants and criminals. But they act not as individuals, but as the foremost representatives of the ideals of the capitalist system. The highest stage of capitalism, Vladimir Lenin wrote in 1917, is imperialism, dictatorship at home, vast criminality and plunder abroad, all a product of the monstrous growth of the wealth and power of the capitalist class. Ultimately, the Gaza genocide, as the most predatory expression of global imperialist war, is a symbol of the homicidal violence being unleashed upon humanity by capitalism. Trump and Netanyahu proceed so provocatively and shamelessly because they know full well they express the homicidal dictates of the capitalist class, and that they will not face opposition from the Democratic Party or any other part of the political establishment. That opposition will come from the building of a mass movement against imperialism spearheaded by the working class. Military operations in Los Angeles signals escalation of fascist methods, by Mark Wells. On Monday, 90 National Guard troops and dozens of federal agents descended on MacArthur Park in Los Angeles in a military-style operation that marks a turning point in the use of armed force against the American working class. Codenamed Operation Excalibur, the assault was a coordinated and rehearsed domestic military deployment. Internal Army documents, leaked and published by journalist Ken Klipperstein, expose the federal government's growing use of militarized force to intimidate and suppress immigrant and working class communities under the pretense of security and law enforcement. The leaked documents included an assessment of collateral damage, given the high population density of the area. Video taken by witnesses and outraged community members showed heavily armed federal agents with police assistance blocking off streets around the park as masked militarized immigration squads marched through, sending children and caregivers fleeing in panic. Soldiers with the California National Guard's 1st Squadron, 18th Cavalry Regiment, were seen on foot horseback, and military vehicles. According to the leaked documents, at least 11 different federal and state agencies participated in the operation, including the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives, the ATF, Customs and Border Protection, CBP, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, ICE, including Enforcement and Removal Operations, ERO, the Drug Enforcement Administration, the DEA, the Federal Bureau of Investigation, FBI, the Federal Protective Services, FPS, Homeland Security Investigations, HSI, the U.S. Marshals Service, the Internal Revenue Service, the IRS, the Los Angeles County Sheriff's Department, the LASD, and the Los Angeles Police Department, the LAPD. Developments in Los Angeles represent a critical front in a nationwide operation. The systematic conspiracy to establish a presidential dictatorship in the United States is rapidly advancing, with Trump using federal security forces to reshape the political landscape. What is unfolding is a calculated and ongoing coup d'etat, an attempt to replace the existing constitutional order with an authoritarian framework of class rule, enforced through repression, fear, and the normalization of military intervention in civilian life. MacArthur Park, often likened to a West Coast Ellis Island, is a symbol of immigrant life and survival in Los Angeles. The area is home to thousands of workers, many undocumented, who fled the devastation wrought by U.S. imperialist wars and CIA-backed counterinsurgency operations in Central America. It is no accident that this working-class neighborhood, steeped in the legacy of U.S. interventionism and mass migration, was chosen as a staging ground for a major federal security operation. According to the leaked military briefings, the mission of the 1st Squadron, 18th Cavalry Regiment, was to, quote, provide strategic interagency site protection, mounted mobile security, and Joint Force Land Component Command, JFLCC, reserve support to Customs and Border Patrol, the CBP, and supporting federal agencies, end quote. The stated goal was not enforcement of any specific law or the pursuit of a concrete threat, but simply to demonstrate, quote, the capacity and freedom of maneuver of federal law enforcement within the Los Angeles Joint Operations Area, the JOA. In other words, this was a show of force, a warning, a rehearsal. The Trump administration is working to undermine the Posse Comitatus Act of 1878, the key law preventing military involvement in domestic policing without explicit constitutional or congressional approval. Intended to uphold civilian authority, the act is being eroded as federal officials increasingly refer to protests in Los Angeles and other cities as an insurrection, laying the ideological groundwork for military intervention, even as they have so far refrained from formally invoking the Insurrection Act of 1807. Despite the media coverage framing the operation as a botched raid, and giving undeserved credit to the intervention of Mayor Karen Bass in clearing the area, every element was militarily conceived and coordinated across 9 federal agencies. Troops in 5-ton trucks lined the park. Phase lines and communication protocols were established. A threat level of high was issued, referencing the supposed presence of MS-13, which the documents described as considering the park its home turf. The role of imperialism in the emergence of MS-13 itself was a determining factor. The gang was not born in El Salvador, but in Los Angeles in the 1980s, particularly in the neighborhoods around MacArthur Park, as a response to gang violence targeting newly arrived Salvadorian immigrants. These immigrants were fleeing a civil war funded and fueled by over $1 billion in U.S. military aid, including arms, training, and political support for a blood-soaked military dictatorship. Though Operation Excalibur was ultimately cut short, quote, we were on the objective for 24 minutes, one guardsman admitted. The fact remains that it unfolded as a fully choreographed military drill on domestic soil, despite some of the phase lines not being executed due to communication failures. But the planning itself reflects a shift in the posture of the American state, from police raids to coordinated military operations within major cities, the architecture of military counterinsurgency used in Kabul, Baghdad, or Gaza, is now being prepared in Los Angeles, New York, Chicago. Significantly, local authorities were given only 2 hours' notice before the troops arrived. Even more revealing were the response from the National Guard soldiers themselves. Many described the operation as idiotic, shameful, and politically motivated. They questioned orders, groaned at the suggestions of wearing ICE-style face masks, and pushed back against the idea of establishing a permanent forward operating base in the park, a proposal floated by military leadership in earlier briefings. These comments should not be underestimated. They represent the first cracks in the state's repressive machinery. As with the Russian Revolution of 1917, when soldiers began to break ranks with the Tsarist regime and sided with the workers and peasants, today's disaffection among American troops points to the potential for deeper ruptures. It reveals a system in decay, forced to use the military against its own population, and increasingly unable to count on the unquestioning obedience of the rank and file. The role of the Democratic Party in this crisis must be bluntly stated. Governor Gavin Newsom commented, "I want folks to know that we have your back and do what we can to protect our diverse communities and to push back against these cruelties." Mayor Karen Bass made a show of rushing to the park to demand federal forces leave, declaring the operation unacceptable. But both Newsom and Bass are complicit. They have both postured as defenders of immigrant rights, while overseeing policies that criminalize immigrants and defund essential services. The latest California budget slashes billions from Medi-Cal, stripping undocumented adults of access to health care. The state's so-called sanctuary laws are riddled with loopholes that allow continued cooperation with ICE. Their feigned outrage is a cynical attempt to preserve political credibility while remaining loyal servants of capital. Monday's sweep came just days after President Trump signed a federal budget that pours billions into immigration enforcement and detention. Already, more than 1,600 immigrants have been arrested in Los Angeles alone between June 6th and June 22nd. These actions are part of a nationwide campaign of intimidation designed to terrorize immigrant workers and whip up fascistic layers of the population. But resistance is already emerging, as evidenced by the 11 million strong No Kings protest on June 14th. Moreover, on the morning of the operation, locals had advanced warnings and plastered flyers around the neighborhood, alerting immigrant workers. Dozens of protesters trailed the troops, waving Mexican and Salvadoran flags. Their presence signaled not just opposition to ICE, but to the entire militarized regime now taking shape. The defense of immigrant workers cannot be left to the political establishment, which has repeatedly proven its hostility to the working class. It must be taken up by the working class itself. The immigrant worker is not a special interest to be protected, but the brother and sister of every worker in the United States. Their repression is the testing ground for broader assault on democratic rights, wages, and conditions. What is required now is not appeals to the Democratic Party and its pseudo-left hangers-on, or reliance on the courts, but the development of a conscious, independent political movement of the working class, based on socialist principles and international solidarity. The attack on immigrants is part of a global offensive by capitalist governments to offload the crisis of the system onto the backs of workers, from Los Angeles to Paris to Santiago to Johannesburg. The enemy is the same. The first step must be the organization of rank-and-file committees in workplaces, neighborhoods, schools, and hospitals to expose and oppose the repressive operation of the state. These committees must lay the groundwork for a nationwide general strike, uniting all sections of the working class, immigrants and citizens, union and non-union, public and private sector, in a collective struggle against austerity, war, and authoritarianism. Operation Excalibur is a warning. The question is not whether the ruling class is preparing for war against the working class. The preparation is already underway. The crucial question is how the working class will respond with the organization, consciousness, and political leadership necessary to fight back. Measles in the U.S. reaches a three-decade high, by Benjamin Mateus. The United States has reached a troubling new milestone, recording the highest number of measles cases in more than three decades. As of July 7, 2025, according to the Johns Hopkins Measles Tracker, a total of 1,281 confirmed measles cases have been reported in the United States, surpassing the 1,274 cases reported in all of 2019. The figure, by all accounts, represents an underestimation of the actual incidences of measles infection. This surge represents a 29-fold increase compared to the 244 cases reported in the same period of 2024. Measles was officially declared eliminated in the U.S. in 2000, and prior to this year, the country typically saw an average of about 180 cases annually since elimination. This alarming resurgence is primarily driven by falling childhood vaccination, particularly in under-vaccinated communities, as seen in a significant outbreak originating in West Texas. The vast majority of those affected, approximately 95% of confirmed cases in 2025, have been individuals who were unvaccinated or whose vaccination status was unknown. The consequences have been severe, with three measles-related deaths reported in the U.S. this year, two children in Texas, and one adult in New Mexico, all of whom were unvaccinated. Matching the total number of U.S. measles deaths over the previous 2.5 decades, experts warn that if current trends persist, the U.S. is at risk of losing its measles elimination status. While West Texas has been identified as a major epicenter of the current measles surge, accounting for 69% of reported cases in an outbreak spanning Texas, New Mexico, and Oklahoma, the prevalence of measles is alarmingly widespread across the United States. As of July 5, 2025, at least 38 states have reported at least one case of measles this year, with a total of 27 identified outbreaks, defined as three or more related cases. Cases have appeared in various states, including Alaska, Arkansas, Arizona, California, Colorado, Florida, Georgia, Hawaii, Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, Kansas, Kentucky, Louisiana, Maryland, Michigan, Minnesota, Missouri, Montana, Nebraska, New Jersey, New Mexico, New York City, New York State, North Dakota, Ohio, Oklahoma, Oregon, Pennsylvania, Rhode Island, South Dakota, Tennessee, Texas, Utah, Vermont, Virginia, and Washington. This widespread distribution shows that while some outbreaks stem from imported cases, local transmission is largely responsible for most reported cases. For instance, a recent spike in Colorado cases was linked to an infectious traveler on a plane, leading to further community spread. The broad age range of affected individuals also suggests that this outbreak has been developing over years due to persistent gaps in measles vaccine coverage, predominantly the result of an insidious anti-vaccination and disinformation campaign that has taken a disturbing hold on the national and international theater. The concerning resurgence of measles is directly linked to a decline in childhood vaccination rates across the U.S. A recent study published in JAMA, Journal of the American Medical Association, analyzed county-level vaccination data and found that childhood MMR, measles, mumps, and rubella vaccination rates, have been declining in much of the U.S. since the start of the COVID-19 pandemic. Specifically, among 2,066 counties in 33 states, 78% reported a decline in vaccination rates. The county-level mean vaccination rate decreased from nearly 94% before the pandemic to about 91% after the pandemic. This puts the national average well below the 95% threshold public health experts consider necessary for herd immunity against measles, a target the U.S. has missed for four consecutive years. Notable drops include Hawaii, which saw its vaccination rate plummet from around 95% pre-pandemic to roughly 80% in the most recent estimates, and Wisconsin, which recorded the lowest average rate among studied states, in the 70s. The connection between declining vaccination rates and the increase in measles infection is evident. Most confirmed measles cases in the U.S. this year, approximately 95% to 96%, have occurred in individuals who were unvaccinated or whose vaccination status was unknown. This underscores the critical role of vaccination in preventing the disease. Measles is one of the most highly transmissible infectious diseases, making even a small drop in immunity a significant risk factor for large outbreaks. Its basic reproduction number is estimated at 12, meaning one infected person can transmit it to up to 12 others in a fully susceptible population. Without a high percentage of vaccinated individuals, the virus can spread rapidly, leading to the return of the disease once eliminated. Experts warn that if current vaccination trends persist, measles may become endemic in the U.S. within approximately two decades, giving up all the gains made in the public health effort to eliminate measles. The troubling trend of surging measles cases is not unique to the United States, as neighboring countries, Canada and Mexico, are also grappling with significant and deadly outbreaks. The Pan American Health Organization, PAHO, and World Health Organization, the WHO, have highlighted these developments, warning that the overall risk of measles in the Americas region is considered high due to low vaccination rates. As of mid-June 2025, the American region has confirmed 7,132 measles cases and 13 deaths. This marks a 29-fold increase compared to the 244 cases reported in the same period of 2024. Canada, Mexico, and the United States account for most of these cases. The most affected age group across the region are among children under 5 and adolescents aged 10 to 19 years. A significant proportion of cases in the Americas, 56%, were in unvaccinated individuals, with 35% having unknown or absent vaccination status. Globally, as of June 6, 2025, WHO reported 88,853 confirmed measles cases in 168 member states. Mexico has reported 2,597 confirmed measles cases, including 9 deaths, as of the week ending June 24, 2025. As of late May, Mexico had reported at least 1,520 cases. This marks Mexico's worst measles outbreak in decades. The outbreak began in March and was traced to an 8-year-old unvaccinated Mennonite boy who visited relatives in Seminole, Texas, an epicenter of the U.S. outbreak. Cases then spread rapidly through Chihuahua's Mennonite community via schools and churches, then to workers in orchards and cheese plants. The Mennonite community in Chihuahua has historically low vaccination rates due to misinformation about vaccines and deep-seated distrust of authorities. Some members view vaccination as a matter of freedom of expression and prefer to cure themselves in their own way, with some even intentionally exposing children at measles parties. Canada has reported 3,170 measles cases, including confirmed and probable cases, and one death as of epidemiological week 23, 2025. This far exceeds the 177 cases reported in all of 2024, and constitutes the highest annual number of cases since measles elimination was achieved in 1998. The reported death was an infant born prematurely with a congenital measles infection from an unvaccinated mother. Most cases, 93% in 2025, were exposed within Canada. A multi-jurisdictional outbreak affecting unvaccinated individuals in communities with low coverage began in New Brunswick in October 2024 and has spread to 9 provinces and territories. While significant shares of outbreaks in the U.S., Canada, and Mexico have been concentrated in closely connected Mennonite communities with historically low vaccination rates, PAHO experts have not formally linked outbreaks in the 3 countries genetically due to limited genetic sequencing. However, travel links have been identified, such as cases in Colorado being linked to travel to Chihuahua, Mexico, and Canada outbreaks linked to cases in Michigan, underscoring the essential point that viruses and diseases do not respect borders, meaning a threat in one place is a threat to the entire world's population. And given the highly safe and effective vaccine, such developments are a disturbing and expanding trend. The troubling resurgence of measles and other vaccine-preventable diseases in the Americas is being further inflamed by deliberate political actions taken by Health and Human Services, the HHS Secretary, Robert F. Kennedy Jr., and his chosen appointees. These maneuvers are widely perceived by scientific and medical communities as fostering deep mistrust in vaccines and posing a direct threat to the bedrock of childhood vaccination programs. It should be recalled that on June 9, 2025, Kennedy abruptly dismissed all 17 members of the CDC's Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices, the ACIP, an unprecedented move in the committee's 61-year history that bypassed standard CDC procedures. He falsely justified the purge by claiming ACIP was, quote, plagued with persistent conflicts of interest and was a rubber stamp. Former CDC Director Dr. Tom Frieden called these claims total misrepresentation and classic misinformation, noting that a 2009 report cited by Kennedy found administrative errors but not widespread conflicts of interest. Then, just 2 days later, Kennedy appointed 8 new ACIP members, many of whom are known for publicly expressing vaccine skepticism, promoting misinformation, or opposing established public health practices. During the recent 2-day meeting, chair of the ACIP and one of the authors of the Great Barrington Declaration, Martin Kulldorff, announced new working groups to, quote, evaluate the cumulative effect of the recommended vaccine schedule. This move was criticized by Dr. Sean O'Leary of the American Academy of Pediatrics, the AAAP, as an anti-vaccine trope. The committee's agenda also shifted to include revisiting long-settled questions, such as the safety of thimerosal, a mercury-based preservative that has been scientifically debunked as having any link to autism. This echoes long-standing anti-vaccine narratives, even though most U.S. vaccines have been thimerosal-free since 2001. In no uncertain terms, these comments and actions are an open attack on the entire public health edifice. Additionally, the withdrawal of a U.S. funding pledge to Gavi, the Vaccine Alliance, an international organization that immunizes children in the world's poorest countries, further compounds this crisis. The U.S. was a major founder, and this withdrawal of $1.2 billion could lead to over 1 million preventable child deaths within 5 years by disrupting immunization programs for 75 million children. Public health experts warn that these, quote, destabilizing decisions made without clear rationale may roll back the achievements of U.S. immunization policy, impact people's access to life-saving vaccines, and ultimately put U.S. families at risk of dangerous and preventable illnesses, end quote. The resurgence of vaccine-preventable diseases like measles and whooping cough is directly linked to these actions and the declining trust and vaccine uptake they foster. Modeling indicates that if current vaccination rates persist, measles may become endemic again in the U.S. within 2 decades, and a 10% decline in MMR vaccination could lead to 11.1 million measles cases over 25 years. You can find all this and more at the World Socialist website, WSWS.org. This has been Archie Stone for the World Socialist website.
The World Socialist website is published by the International Committee of the Fourth International, the ICFI, the leadership of the World Socialist Movement, the Fourth International founded by Leon Trotsky in 1938. The World Socialist website relies entirely on the donations of readers and listeners for financial support. To give to the WSWS or to set up a regular monthly contribution, go to wsws.org/donate. We urge our listeners to join the International Committee of the Fourth International and one of its affiliated political parties and take up the struggle for socialism.